The rest of the mass march.
The mass march. I don't know what his name was. Well, that's Tom Hanlon. He's not a president. I don't recall his name, actually. Well, I'll check up on that. Morning, Tom. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Hoff. It's mighty nice to be back, I'll tell you.
Tom, I think you deserve a great hand for that fine show you put on CBS Radio last Friday night from Indianapolis. And let's give it to him right now. Just great. California boys did pretty well there, didn't they?
They certainly did. And Hoff, on that hand, I want to include Ralph Rose, our producer and director here in Hollywood, because Ralph actually was the guy that had to put it all together, you see.
Fine. In other words, you sent hours of tapes and he cut them down, huh?
Well, at least 2 hours, I
think. Well, that's fine.
There's so much to talk about back there, you know.
And we had a wonderful little dinner and showing of a film tonight with CBS Radio at Ciro's. Quite proud to be associated with radio. It's a great medium. We love it, don't we, Tom?
We certainly do, and as a matter of fact, when you take a little trip like I had, you can appreciate the value of radio even more. When you're taking drives, you know, out of town, depend on the car radio and the weather forecast and so forth.
Absolutely.
Which leads me right now to advise all the folks tuned to KNX to stay tuned to KNX Radio, because we'll have more election returns for you before we sign off. But right now, settle back and relax and enjoy Encore Time. This is the program that relives the golden past of all show business. And tonight, you'll hear those wonderful old-time records. You will hear Dick Orant at the organ console, Major Andrew White, the man with the million memories, and the founder of CBS Radio. And here's the head man of the entire deal, the one and only Hawthorne, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, folks, who came down here in person tonight. Many of you are home listening for the election returns, and we will break in any time through the show with any late returns. Also, we've had a few requests to ask what the theme is that is played on Tuesday night by Dick in the background. That is Hail Columbia, the very first song ever heard on the CBS radio network, 1927. You picked it out, didn't you?
Well, it was the natural, you know. We had to start with something like that.
Well, it was a great selection, wonderful selection. And we have some numbers I think you'll enjoy tonight, too. How many remember the Clico Club Eskimos? Anybody here? Say about 200 or 300 of you. Well, that's fine. Under the direction of Harry Reeser. Then we're going to hear Nat M. Wills. Nat Wills. And he's going to tell us about a father of 36. I guess it's 36 years, I hope.
36 inches, it says on our program.
It does? 36 inches. Very small.
Perfect man. 36.
Frank Crummett is going to sing Crazy Words and Crazy Tune. And Dick is going to give us a mystery medley tonight. Two of the tunes are going to be guessed by our audience here, and the third one is for our air audience to try and guess and send us cards and letters to tell us what they are. What it is. W.C. Fields tonight, part four of his great temperance lecture. And I think you'll enjoy it. Bill Morrow wrote that. Evelyn Herbert, whom I don't believe we've had.
Yes, once.
Did we have her once?
Mm-hmm.
This man with a million memories. Love Her Come Back to Me, she's going to do it. And Bert Williams with Woodman Spare That Tree. And we'll get the overture going with Harry Reeser conducting the Clico Club Eskimos. And Tom Stacks is going to sing this one. About 1927, this was making the rounds in the radio waves at sundown. Thank you.
raise a sighing of love undying at sundown. Every little bird is resting and feather nesting at sundown. Each little rosebud is sleeping while shadows are creeping. In a little cottage cozy, the world seems rosy at sundown, where a loving smile will greet me and always meet me at sundown. I seem to sigh I'm in heaven when night is falling and love is calling me home.
Something about that music I love. What is it, Andy? Do you know?
Well, Harry Reicher, of course, is a splendid banjo player, and you go for banjos.
That must be it, yeah.
I remember this fellow was a pioneer in the highest sense of the term, certainly one of the earliest of the sponsored programs. Now, the Clico Club Eskimos were dressed in costume, Eskimo costume. And remember, at this time, of course, there was no such thing as an audience. Everything was done in the studio. But they did it for photography purposes. But Harry Reicher never appeared with his band without the boys all dressed in the Eskimo costumes.
Well, wasn't this awfully warm?
Oh, sure, but they had their different weights according to the season of the year. But it was a good effect. Now, what I missed on this record, I didn't hear it, was a characteristic opening. They always opened with the yelping of the dogs, the Eskimo dogs, and the jingling of the sleigh bells.
Maybe the record they had before this was a dog, and they decided not to do it anymore.
I see. It took till 1927 to get that way, though. I think that was the date of this recording.
Yes.
Now, Harry started in 1923. Now, that was pretty early. And in fact, it was at the very beginning of sponsored programs. Well, it was broadcasting in 1921. It was 2 years old then, but there hadn't been any sponsored stuff. Now, at first, he used this jingle bells, which I'm missing. It doesn't seem right to me to have that omitted, as a background solely for the announcer. And then later, he wrote some introductory music. And this was the first musical theme to identify a program. And another thing, too, I remember was he was called a sparkling banjoist, and that was tied into the sparkling ginger ale, which Clico Club was. I wonder now if people don't know what it advertised. It was Clico Club ginger ale.
Mm-hmm.
And here he was. I remember that when this particular account was sold, they had to bypass the advertising agency. The president of the company said they don't believe in radio. And 5 years later, or 10 years later, they were lining up on a waiting list to get on. But that was the way it was back in 23. I have very fond memories of Harry Reicher, always a good performer. And I think that considering how old this is, that was a darn good performance, though.
I enjoyed it. Before we have a father of 36, how many children do you have, Tom?
I have three, Hoff.
Three. Well, I suppose there are many listeners who have families, and quite possibly...
That's an extraordinary observation.
I was hoping...
This is sure a sneaky way to get into a commercial.
Boy, I had to wreck that one.
Well, I throw these things in. I just want to see
if you hadn't have said, I suppose.
Well, I could have let it go by. However, I suppose there are many people who are humans listening to it.
Many people are people.
And they are the ones we want to reach, because they are the people who buy furniture. And we certainly have the place to buy furniture. Beacon Storage Company Furniture Sales Division. Tom, you tell them about it, huh?
Well, you're quite right, Hoff, and... This commercial sort of fits in with Encore Time because home furnishings are one of the most enduring and most satisfying investments that we ever make. And you know, they can be even more satisfying, friends, if you get high quality furniture at bargain prices. And of course, high quality furniture will last for years and years. And during the past 20 years, thousands of people have learned the truth at Beacon Storage Company Furniture Sales Division, corner of Pico and Crenshaw here in Los Angeles. Now at Beacons, you can buy either better grade used furniture or brand new furniture from the nation's largest manufacturers, and at prices that are a bargain hunter's dream. You see, Beacons Furniture Sales Division operates in a warehouse atmosphere, and this is the most economical place to make retail sales, so they pass the savings on to you. Don't pay a penny more until you've personally investigated the bargains in real quality furniture at Beacon Storage Company, Furniture Sales Division, corner of Pico and Crenshaw. There's always plenty of parking. They're open evenings until 9, and terms are available if you want them.
Thank you, Thomas. We have a little poem contest going on right now. A contest that is pretty easy to enter. Here's the winner for tonight, Tuesday, June 3rd. The case of Hawaiian Punch goes to Jane Hope Costello of Los Angeles, and here's her poem. It says, "The commercials Hawthorne did speed up, with laughter my sides did weaken, but lo and behold, when they were slowed down, they said buy furniture from Beacons," which shows people listen to our sped up commercials, huh? I'd like to have you enter the contest for the best one sent in each week, the best poem, judge's decision final. The prize is dinner and entertainment for two at the Mocambo. Joey Lewis is out there right now and doing a great job. All entries received by Friday midnight each week will be considered as a possible winner to be announced on Saturdays, and all entries received after midnight Friday will be carried over to the following week. All poems become the property of KNX Radio, and all poems judged on originality of thought and humorous theme. Somewhere, put the words furniture from Beacons therein. Say, it occurred to me this Clico Club Eskimos, nobody's done that in recent years. They could call it the Regal Pale Rompers or something like that. It'd be a great name for
you. Do you wear those or do you do the romping?
With Regal Pale. Nat Wills, a humorous monologue. It's that way on the label, and it is. This is about a 1915 vintage, way, way back. And listen very closely. Get up close to the loudspeaker and imagine yourself as hearing this man talking into your ear. All right, Nat Wills and a father of 36.
Thank you very much. Indeed, very sweet and kind of you to receive my humble efforts in so appreciative manner. I can assure you that I am indeed very grateful. And were it not from the fact that I'm suffering from a slight cold, the result of having sit in a draught last night, yes, we had the keg right in the doorway. I sat in the draught most of the evening. Consequently, I'm a little indisposed. Otherwise, I would be only too pleased to sing you 30 or 40 more songs. But it is a physical impossibility. But I'm going to get a little confidential this afternoon and tell you exactly why I am in your city this week. I really, really have a double motive in being here. The first object being that I am desirous of obtaining the coin of the realm, which will be forthcoming on Saturday evening next for my efforts upon the rostrum here this week. Yes. Secondly, I have a son who is going to a college near this city. I can't say that I'm altogether pleased with the way he's getting along. So I made up my mind while I was here I would kill two birds with one stone. Go out to the school, investigate matters, and see if I could find out what has delayed him. So I went out the other evening and met the boy. I said, my son, I'm not altogether pleased with the progress you've made here. You may be a most excellent football or baseball player, but for the amount of currency that I am coughing up annually, I want something besides athletics for mine. And in the morning, I'm going over to the college to see the dean, see if I can find out what the trouble is. Well, he said, I'll tell you, Dad. If you're going over to the college tomorrow to see the dean, don't mention my name, will you? Why, I said, are you ashamed of your name? Oh, no, he said, quite the contrary. I'm very proud of it. But he said, the fact of the matter is, since you were a boy, since you went to school, things have changed. They have a different system nowadays. He says, we go by number. My number is 36. Oh, I said, that's different. Your explanation is as clear as mud. However, I went over the next day and I met the dean. He wore eyeglasses. He had on some other clothing, too, of course. He wasn't wearing just eyeglasses alone. I said, good morning. He said, good morning. I said, I'm the father of 36. Well, what do you want, a party rate, said he. He also added, come on and have a drink. I'm the father of 15 myself.
Father of 15 myself. Well, that's a cute one. My golly, humor has certainly progressed, but we still have this basic humor today, haven't we?
Yeah, I think the audience might like to know about Nat Wills. It's too bad this wasn't mentioned in advance. I wasn't familiar with what he was going to do. I don't hear these records in advance. But Nat Wills was a... to get a picture of him, he was a happy tramp comedian. Now, this voice and the incongruity of the tramp, you can imagine what this fella's skill was. His clothes were just a bewildering shambles. See, they were put together with instead of the conventional safety pin, he had a 10-penny nail holding things. He had 3 or 4 medals on his chest. A few front teeth were missing, and he had a beard on which he would scratch matches, and he had his lower lip made up so it extended from ear to ear. Now, when you get a picture of that man talking as he did, and he could talk in almost any manner, any humor, any mood, and any dialect. He also I don't recall him in any show except Hippodrome. He was a vaudevillian, a top headliner. Way back in 1915, this record was supposed to be?
Yes, approximately.
Well, that 1915 was when he had a very difficult thing to do. I'm pretty sure of the year, 1915. That was when Sarah Bernhardt was brought into the palace. And Sarah Bernhardt, of course, was the queen of tragedians. She was absolute tops. And she received tremendous applause, bow after bow, and Wills was supposed to follow her at a very tough spot. And the applause continued, and Wills entered finally after Bernhardt had gone to her dressing room. And just then the usher rushed down, a little badly timed, with an enormous bouquet. There was nobody there to receive it, and Wills looked embarrassed and looked to right and left, and somebody yelled out from a box, "Oh, give the flowers to Wills, he's dying anyhow."
Great. Our number three is held down by Frank Crummett. I like his Song of the Prune best. It was the newest wrinkle when it was released. This is Crazy Words and Crazy Tune. Frank Benta plays the piano on this one, too.
Yeah.
About 1927. This is the way things sounded then.
If he doesn't stop, I will. Got a ukulele and a voice that's loud and shrill. 'Cause he lives next door to me, and he keeps me up till 3 with his ukulele and a funny melody. Great. crazy words, a crazy tune, all that you'll ever hear him croon. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do, bo-do-do, sits around all night long, sing the same words to every song. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do, is the ukulele daily, how he'll strum, bum, 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 vampin' and stampin', then he hollers black. Bottom, crazy words, crazy tunes, he'll be driving me crazy soon. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do. I have begged that guy to stop, I have even called a cop, told my dog go sick him, but the darn dog wouldn't go. But tonight will be the end, yes siree, cause I intend to go up and kick him in the bo-do-do-dee-o-do. Crazy words, crazy tune, all that you'll ever hear him croon. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do, bo-do-do, sits around all night long, sing the same words to every song. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do, he's got to stop it, stop it, yes he must, or I'll just kill him, I'll kill him, then I'll do the black bottom, when I'm jailed for my deed, to the jury and the judge I'll plead. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do. Everybody sings nowadays. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do, bo-do-do. Every goof, every sheep, tunes as you can begin to shriek. Bo-do-dee-o, bo-do-do-dee-o-do. Go on the east side, the west side, here or there, everywhere, they do-do, bo-do-do. Then they holler black bottom, young or old, old or young. The guy that started it should be hung.
Bo-do-do-dee-o-do, da-do-do-do, da-da-da-dum, ba-da-da-dum. What was that? That wasn't a banjo there, was it?
A uke.
Uke?
Yeah. Frank Crummett was the first one to play the uke that I remember as a public performer. I saw Frank Crummett
before
first.
Arthur Godfrey?
Yeah, slightly before. I'm going back to 1909. That's when I saw this fellow first. And I know the date because it was the opening of Maxime's, a restaurant that was supposed to be the same as Maxime's in Paris. And, of course, they had a very Frenchy and sensational type of show, but they had a small runway. And in the midst of the performance appeared this fellow just in an ordinary dinner clothes, a tuxedo, as they're called. He was fresh from Yale and had never performed before, and he had this silly little ukulele, an instrument that was practically unknown, and he just sat up there on that runway and sang just as you've heard him singing now. And he was such a novelty, he was an absolute riot against all those big performers. This one, it was made in 1927, which was, of course, the year that Columbia Broadcasting was founded. And that also is very reminiscent. Frank Crummett, anybody in show business who was in New York long enough to get acclimated, knew this fella and knew him extremely favorably and very well. Frank Crummett's one of the nicest men that ever graced the stage. This particular year, in 1927, he was playing in a show called OK with his wife, Judith Sanderson, who was a very beautiful girl and good singer and good dancer. And Frank Crummett stayed right with it when 20 years ago, when I was trying to establish a transcription as an experimental thing, Frank Crummett dug up the finest programs I've ever had the privilege to direct and produce from the Lambs Club. He was shepherd of the Lambs Club. Might be reminiscent of Ukulele Ike, just to hear that mm-hmm. type of singing. This fella goes way back. He is the absolute beginner with the uke and the absolute beginner with the vodeo type of thing, and just as opposite from Ukulele Ike as two people could be. This fellow was good-looking, stylish, and played in the plays, all musical plays, of course, played opposite his wife. And they'd remind me of the suave, completely suave, romantic type. These things, I don't know whether they're of interest or not, but I have the mental pictures of these performers, and this fellow's just as opposite as you might think, because his style was later adopted by Ukulele Ike.
Well, I certainly do. I know that the folks appreciate your word pictures you described for us. This is KNX Los Angeles, the Star's Address. I finally remember the...
The Star's Address?
Yeah.
Oh, I was in that line.
CBS, the Star's Address. And this is KNX, the 50,000-watt voice for the entire West Coast, including 11 states. We even get mail from New York. I guess including 11 Western states and one New York state. My name is Hawthorne. Andy White is with us, as he usually is on Tuesday nights, Wednesday mornings, reminiscing about the records that I have selected here. And as Andy said before, he never hears them before. They're played right here, so he starts even with you. These things are called to his attention, to his mind. Memory Medley, this is the time that we select three tunes. Dick selects them, and he says, I'll bet you nobody gets any of these three. Well, we try the audience on the first two, and about 50% of the time they come up with the right title. But on the third one, we leave that strictly to the air audience, and that's up to you folks out there to invest 2 cents in a postcard and put the title that you think that Dick is going to play, the title of the tune that Dick's going to play. So here go with Richard.
Hoss, what happened to last week's the one tune I played? I've forgotten what I played myself.
You didn't play any last week.
No wonder you forgot it.
Last week we had Vic and Sade, remember?
Oh, that's
right. Supposedly.
He's been trying for 6 days to remember what the tune was he played.
Two silver or something.
It's nothing. I have the K-Star record at home. Number two. Mm-hmm. Why not? Thank you. You gotta write this down. Did anybody hear? No? Does anybody? Don't let your heart go goo goo. Don't let your heart go gaga. Don't let your heart go goo goo. Don't let your heart go boom boom. Is that it?
That's three titles.
Don't let your heart go go go. Don't let your heart go boom boom. Is that it?
That's part of it. That's the lyrics.
Don't let your heart go gaga. Don't let your heart go. I can't. I don't know. What is it?
Don't let your heart must be the name.
Don't let your love go wrong.
This is the hardest thing.
Don't let your love go wrong.
Don't let your love go wrong. Oh, what a knucklehead! Don't let your heart. Don't let your heart go gaga. Oh no. Okay, here's the one for everybody. Guess. No prizes, just a lot of fun. You folks at home, be here. Be real quiet if you know what it is. Don't say it.
I don't think you're going to get this one quite so easy.
Okay. Beautifully done, Dick. I don't know what the tune was. Don't any of you say it. But it's awfully pretty. Gee, that could be a revival.
After no? the show.
Yeah, no, don't say it now. After the show, you can tell us if you know what it is. That's the clue, and it was a big hit. All right, you folks listening, this is strictly for you. And as I say, there's no prizes. We don't give away anything, but we like to have your letters. If you think you know what it is, because we can sort of take a little census here on the tune. Temperance Lecture, W.C. Fields. This is part four of the Temperance Lecture. I think there are six sides to this, but this was the most representative and the one of the funniest. Written by Bill Morrow. Ran over the piano. Well, that introduction, I can't follow that.
Right then and there, I swore that I would never again poison my system with maraschino cherries. 2 weeks later, I slipped and had another. But you must believe me when I say I thought it was a seedless grape. I washed it down with some snake bite remedy, which I always keep handy. Only, however, after first being bitten by a snake, which I also keep handy. Those who overindulge in strong drink always have serpents handy. In fact, some hapless souls are burdened with them as constant companions. In my time, I can remember the company of many assorted reptiles. In addition to pink elephants with lavender dots, a bright blue ostrich with a mixmaster for a tail, and a chartreuse octopus that taught me to samba, or samba, as we say over home. A thief broke into my house one night and stole my octopus. He cut his tentacles off and used them for non-skid automobile tires. A cruel thing to do. I wish I had have thought of it. In closing, I would like to offer my favorite recipe to take the place of intoxicants. It's real thirst quencher. It's called the raspberry freeze, known in England as the raspberry freeze. Take 1 cup of pineapple juice, 2 cups of raspberry juice, mind you, if you're in Europe, 1 cup of black tea, 3 cups of water, and 2 egg whites. Freeze until half stiff. Well, when you're half stiff, everything is all right. I thank you.
Temperance Lecture by W.C. Fields.
I never heard that before.
You haven't heard it?
No.
It was made in 1946, Andy. I'm so grateful that it was made because there's so few records of his. I don't remember any old ones that we've ever played. Do you?
No. These are scarce, and I enjoyed that a lot. The 3 more parts of that?
Yes.
Let's have the other 3 parts every now and then.
No, all right, we'll go backwards. We'll go 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hey, of course, W.C. Fields made his big reputation playing alcoholic parts, and there isn't any doubt at all that he liked his liquor, but this I do know because I knew him fairly well and did a fair amount of business with him. He drank steadily, but he was never drunk. Now, I've never known anybody who ever saw him drunk, and he hated drunks.
Hmm.
He just wanted to push them out of the way. But the explanation of this was that alcohol seemed to merely to quiet his nerves, and he had tuberculosis when he was a youngster. And when this was discovered by later in life, he was told he'd have to stop everything and just lie down and play dead until he did die. So he took to liquor instead, and that was the real reason that he was always endeavoring to beat this tubercular condition, which cleared itself up because he lived to 67.
Yeah. Maybe preserved.
Yeah, he definitely believed that. Now, he had 3 wardrobe trunks. This was this I have seen with my own eyes, and one of them was made up just like a cellarette, and it was just chock full of liquor, nothing else. When he was with the Vanities, which Columbia was 1 year old then, and I was trying to work a deal with him to go on broadcasting, went over to the dressing room, and here were the 3 trunks and the traditional one, which was a liquor cabinet, but now there were 2 trunks that were liquor cabinets. He still had 3, and he said 1 would suffice for the clothes.
Hmm.
Most of you people who are familiar with W.C. Fields' work know him for his roles in pictures mainly. Some of you may have seen him in the theater. But for many years, he was a vaudevillian, a tramp juggler. We had 1 tramp a little early in the evening. Now we have a tramp juggler. And then he developed, the reason he became a tramp juggler was that he didn't have any money for costumes. So he made up that way. He was a very good juggler. And he was starting when he was 19 years old. This boy made $125 a week, which was a lot of money in those days, and affordable. And he was a big time for years with a trick billiard table and billiard cue, grotesque cue that wrapped itself all around in contortions. And of course, this table was wired up, but you couldn't see it. And he'd make these amazing shots, utterly impossible to conceive of anybody playing such a a game of pool, but it was a majestic, stylized parody of a pool player. That was what got you. He kept that act for 40 years. It was only in 1923 that he made a show called Poppy, and the character was Eustace McGargle. And he was the grandiose humbug that he stayed in that role all the rest of his life. Poppy, 2 years later, was made into motion picture, and there's where I think most of you will have seen him and remember him there.
I think the folks who remember good food have been to Angelo's.
Oh, yeah.
Any one of the three Angelo's. The Copper Room, Beverly Drive at Santa Monica Boulevard in Beverly Hills. The Silver Room, Angelo's Silver Room, Burton Way at Doheny, and Angelo's downtown, West 6th, east of Spring. Gee, you've been talking about these folks for quite some time, almost a year, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of people going there because they've heard us talk about it, and so I've been told that the mouths are watering too much, so we won't mention anything special except that barbecued beef plate.
Yeah, or the steaks. They're good.
Oh, that hot roast turkey sandwich.
Ham steak is one of them.
Well, that French fried shrimp plate I'd go for.
How about two grilled eastern pork chops with apples?
We weren't going to say a word about the things that you could get there, were we?
Well, we don't want the people to think that we're saying too much good about it. But it's all the truth. Believe me, we could go overboard and say that Angelo's is the greatest in the world, so we will. It is.
Yeah, it does.
Best food. Remember Angelo's, spelled R-E-S-T-A-U-R-A-N-T-S. Mm-hmm. Angelo's restaurants, three of them, the Silver Room, the Copper Room, in downtown West 6th, east of Spring. And I should be a news announcer for this. Here's a KNX News Bureau bulletin. Latest tabulation, I have never been able to do real announcing to read. I can't read copy. Latest, we got 19 men up in the newsroom. What are they doing? I got to read this. I guess they're working.
You got to get the pear-shaped tone first in your voice.
Latest tabulations on the California primary election show. I sound like H.B. Calton Hogan. Latest tabulations on the California primary elections show on the Republican side, Governor Earl Warren, 357,712. Thomas Wardell, 174,317. This is with 8,863 of the state's 19,730 precincts reporting. On the Democratic side, 8,868 precincts reporting. Senator Estes Kefauver, 391,863. Pat Brown, 180,205. In the race for California Senator, incumbent William Nolan won the nomination on both the Republican and Democratic slates. He'll enter the November election uncontested. Fireworks in that South Dakota primary. Senator Robert Taft leads General Eisenhower most of the night. But now, latest returns with 258 precincts yet to report show that Ike has whittled Taft's earlier lead. Now trails by only 1,322 votes. Earlier, he was nearly 4,000 behind. At this hour, it looks as if a final tabulation will be necessary to prove the winner conclusively. So that's the story on the election right up to the minute from our KNX Radio News Bureau. The boys are up there tabulating these things. And I suppose we'll find out at 1 o'clock whether we're going to stay on after 1. We'll see how the results are then. We'll have to get going here to get these two in.
Yeah, there's two more to go.
Well, Lover Come Back to Me with Evelyn Herbert. This is from the musical comedy New Moon, Hammerstein, and Romberg. Soprano, about 1929 for this one.
Blue.
Herbert, Lover Come Back to Me.
Well, now, number one, Evelyn Herbert was so beautiful that I can't think of anybody singing today who could hold a candle to her. She was a graceful, she was a beautiful dancer, and her voice, which you've just heard, ties in with a letter. Somebody named Camille Kennedy of Santa Monica is represented in this mail we were looking over here a few minutes ago, and she asks if I remember the Knickerbocker Hotel and that Caruso was a patron. Caruso was the man who trained this voice you've just listened to, Evelyn Herbert. Evelyn Herbert's father was the chef at the Knickerbocker Hotel. Caruso was not only a patron, he lived there. And this was the voice that he picked to train. She's a radio girl. She started in 1923 with Roxy's Gang. And at the time when CBS began, in 27, she was a great big top star coming out of Roxy, of course, was a vaudeville, a motion picture house with a stage show. But she was the star of My Marilyn then. She married, some time back, married her leading man, J. Harold Murray, and I have yet to find anybody who has laid eyes on Evelyn since. I hope sometime that she might be listening. I'd love to see her and have her come over in the audience. Somebody seen or heard of her or heard her sing, so far as I can find out.
Well, here's Bert Williams to wind up things with Woodman, Spare That Tree.
Is a tree grows right near our house. Been there quite some time. The tree is a slippery elm tree, and it's very hard to climb. But when my wife gets after me in that tree I root, I can go up just like a healthy squirrel. I never need a boot. T'other day, a woodman come round to chop my refuge down and split it up into kindling wood to spread it round the town. I said to him, my friend, desist. Wait, stop. Lay down thy forest razor. Chop not a single chop. No, woodman, woodman, spare a tree, touch not a single bough. 3 years it has protected me, and I'll protect it now. Go chop an oak, a birch or pine, but leave this slippery elm of mine. It's the only tree my wife can't climb. All woodman, spare it for me. I says to him, do you see that hole right near this old tree top? Well, I'm got $5 hit up there, and it's yours. If you refuse to chop, no beast but me can climb the tree, because rarely, friend, it is too slippery. And I can't get up there very well myself, lest my wife is after me. Now you get my wife, and I'll call her a very naughty word. Then all you do is just watch me, and I'll give an imitation of a bird. You may not know that's where I go, that is, if she's round. But all I ask is remember, if you don't see me on the ground, no, woodman, woodman, spare a tree, touch not a single bough. And I'll drop the five down to thee, the one I promised thou. But you must make your act behave. This slippery elf, it must be saved. It's the borderline between me and the grave. Woodman, bad for me.
About 1916, that was, huh, Andy?
Yeah, we haven't any time left, so I've said so much about Bert Williams on other occasions. The only one thing that I think might be interesting to those who are listening, Irving Berlin wrote this song, Woodman Spare That Tree. He was only 25 years old at the time, and this was the same year that he wrote Alexander's Ragtime Band.
Is that so? Well, I want to thank the listeners who took time to write us about the Vic and Sade recordings we presented last week through the courtesy of Art Thorson, and also Billy Idelson was our guest. If you folks would like to hear a reprise or a repeat broadcast of Vic and Sade or some new Vic and Sade recordings, please let us know, because we only know by the number of letters we get. If we get enough letters, we'll repeat it. Received quite a few last week, but I'd like to hear a show of hands, see just exactly how many of you people would like to hear Vic and Sade again.
That's pretty neat to hear.
Hear a show of hands.
Hear, well, a show of hands.
Well, if they go like this, is what I meant.
Applause through the mail.
That's right. You folks will be with us next Tuesday, I trust. Thank you, Andy, for sitting in again tonight.
Nice
54th
to
week?
Here. 54th
week, starting our second year.
Look forward to 55th week.
Right. I'll be back tomorrow night, 12:05, with some more audience stuff and things like that. And tomorrow afternoon at 4:45. So until we see you again, this is Hawthorne thanking Dick and Ron for being with us too. And it all came to you from Columbia Square.
And KNX Los Angeles.